You're listening to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Big John McCarthy has witnessed the best that the UFC had to offer.
That is it! Game, set, match! We have a new champion!
Your backstage pass to the world of mixed martial arts and combat sports on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network.
Let's get it on!
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and me, Sean Wheelock. Every week on this podcast, John and I give you an inside look at MMA and combat sports, always separating fact from fiction. On this week's program, we'll discuss Conor McGregor's first-round knockout win versus Jose Aldo in the main event of last Saturday's UFC 194 in Las Vegas, which of course Big John refereed, and we'll examine what the victory means for McGregor, the UFC, and the sport of MMA. John and I will also discuss the UFC staging three fight cards and 34 total bouts over three straight days in Las Vegas, marking perhaps the biggest week in the organization's 22-year history. And we'll follow up on last week's explosive interview with Tricia Morrison, the widow of former WBO World Heavyweight Champion Tommy Morrison, who vehemently denied on this program that her late husband ever contracted the HIV virus or AIDS. Plus, as we do on every episode of Let's Get It On, John will answer your questions. Submit them via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. via SpeakPipe on our website, Let's Get It On Podcast, and on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Remember that you can download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, that address again, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Let's Get It On is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/letsgetiton. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, and MP3 player. Well, last Saturday night, Conor McGregor recorded a devastating first-round knockout win in just 13 seconds over Jose Aldo to become the UFC's undisputed featherweight champion. John, you were, of course, the referee, and now I'm not just saying this because we do this program and we're very close friends, but just like McGregor, I thought you were phenomenal in that fight. Perfect positioning, perfect recognition, perfect timing. You showed why you were the top referee in the history of our sport.
Oh, well, thank you, but you know what? I didn't have much time to be in there. Someone ended that fight really fast, and it's, you know, I've heard so many comments about people, and you know, there's people disappointed that there wasn't really a fight, and it's like there was a fight. You know, things happen, and that's part of the fight game. And you know, the person I feel bad for is I really feel bad for Jose Aldo because you know, people are looking and saying things about him now, and people can be so freaking cruel. It's no different than you know what we've talked about with other you know fighters, and when they lose. Everyone's waiting for you to lose so they can put you down. And, you know, Jose went out there, you know, he got caught with a shot, you know, and I look at, you know, how it happened and what was occurring. And, you know, I got to give credit to Conor McGregor. What I saw was, you know, that whole thing that I've talked about with Conor before is Conor, the one thing that I've always said about him, that he does an incredible job of controlling the distance. And he did it again. If you watch what he did, when he first came out, he threw one, you know, left hand. He stepped to the outside of, you know, Jose's foot, threw the left hand, came back, threw this, you know, the kick to the leg. And as Jose came in, he did a beautiful job of controlling that distance as he's actually moving backwards, but planted his foot. And Jose coming in added to the power of that left hand. And he hit him on the button. You know, and Jose actually hit Conor and even cut him with the shot that was altered based upon being, you know, just, you know, cracked by Conor, but just a beautiful job by Conor McGregor. And, you know, it was an incredible 13 seconds of performance. If you break it down and look at it, man, the guy is incredible. When you look at all the things that, you know, people talk about and what he's doing talking, well, he's talking the talk, but he's walking the walk.
The run of Jose Aldo, John, not just entering as the champion, but had not lost since November 2005, comes in on an 18-fight winning streak. And I think almost some of the anger for people who don't like Conor McGregor comes from the fact that Aldo has been so dominant for over 10 years and he was taken out so quickly.
Well, and that's part of what people were, you know, I've heard, you know, people commenting on it and saying, you know, all these things about, oh, I've heard fix. That's the most.
Oh, it's the worst.
Unbelievable, ridiculous, you know, comment. Anyone could even come up with, oh, fix. You know, okay, you're going to lose. And what we're going to do is we're going to have you get cracked and you're going to fall as a stiff board towards your left side and you're going to kind of roll. And when he rolls, we're going to have Conor come and hammer fist his forearm across the bridge of your face to make it look really good. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? You think this is the way you're going to work or fix a fight? You know, people are, they don't give credit where it's due sometimes. And sometimes they give it in an overly, you know, audacious way. But anybody can lose a fight. And eventually, you know, I don't know how many times have I said it, Sean. Eventually, in our game, you're going to be someone's highlight reel. And it's going to happen to Conor McGregor. I guarantee you, somewhere along the way, he's going to become someone's highlight reel. It happens to everyone. And as the fighter, you just got to look at it and say, okay, let me look at this. Where did I make my mistakes? Where can I get better? Let me start to readjust and get back to doing what I do. And that's what Jose has to do. You know, I know how upset he was after the fight. I know how crushed he was because he does feel like I wasn't able to fight. Now, was there a fight? Absolutely. There was a fight. It was a short one. But when you're Jose Aldo, you feel like I did all this training. I did everything to get myself ready, and I didn't get to show what I can do. And he wants to get back in there, and I don't blame him. And eventually he will. And, you know, those guys are going to meet again.
John, we've talked about this a lot on Let's Get It On. My preparation as a commentator, I can tell with probably about 80% accuracy, just based on my fighter meetings, my fighter interviews, which I do either the day before, 2 days before, depending on the fight and depending on the promotion. But usually about 80% of the time I'm right. I know based on those interviews who is going to win the fight. You've said on this program, you've said to me privately, you get a similar sense from your referee meetings, which you're doing a few hours before the fight. What was the scene like in the Aldo dressing room, and what was the scene like in the McGregor dressing room when you did your respective fighter meetings? And did you get that feeling that it was Conor McGregor's night?
You know, the one thing that I felt, you know, when I went to, you know, Jose's dressing room, he's getting his hands wrapped by his, you know, trainer, Andre Pettinaris. I had Andre kind of stop because I also had the executive director, Bob Bennett, and the chair of the Nevada State Athletic Commission with me because they wanted to, you know, listen to fighter instructions. They wanted to make sure that they knew everything that was said. So if something happens along the way, they knew exactly what was told to the fighter. And, you know, Jose was relaxed. He was, you know, sitting down. He was listening. Nothing real special in his room. But when you went to Conor's, when I went to Conor's, Conor was actually working and helping Gunnar Nelson get ready for his fight. He was warming him up. And when I started talking to him, Conor stood there, you know, and looked at me and answered everything that I talked about. Yes, sir. You know, just absolutely 100% confident. And if you're going to look and say, you know, who wanted to be there more, it actually seemed like Conor was, he was happy to be there. Where Jose, it seemed like it's just another day. And sometimes, you know, that'll work against you, you know, when you're too amped for something and you always want to be relaxed. But Conor looked really good in the back. He looked ready. He looked happy to be there. And, you know, looked like this is where I want to be for this night. So that's what you're looking for out of a fighter.
Conor McGregor, I think you and I agree, he gets it. Now, I know there are a lot of people listening to this program who are massive Conor McGregor fans. A lot of people listen to our program from Northern Ireland and where Conor McGregor is from, the Republic of Ireland. And there are a lot of people who listen to this program who do not like him at all. But from my perspective, he gets it. He talks the part, he dresses the part, and most importantly, he fights the part.
It's not only that. I think that, you know, the thing that I love about the guy is, first off, he's getting better. You look at the things that he does, he is working towards getting better, and his trainers are doing a phenomenal job with him. John Kavanaugh, you know, he's working with a very talented person anyways. But the things that he's, you know, training him and teaching him to do and having him technically get proficient at are all things that he's doing at a level that right now is above everybody else that he's fighting. And man, you got to be impressed by everything that he's doing. Not only, you know, the one thing that I thought going into the fight was that as a difference, you know, being the champion, there's a pressure that goes with being the champion. And there's an expectation of you from the promoters to, you know, carry the, you know, the buildup of the fight and doing all of the media and everything. And the one thing that I saw as a difference was, you know, I saw Connor doing all of this media stuff and everyone thinks that he likes doing it. And I don't give a shit who you are. It gets old, you know, having to deal with the media and having to talk to him and say the same things over and over and all these things, it gets old to anyone. And I saw Connor really doing a whole lot of media work. And that's part of his job as that main event to do that. And he was doing, you know, let's say 70% of it while Jose was doing 30% of it. And I really looked at that and I thought, you know what? It's easier to be Jose Aldo right now than it is Conor McGregor. And the load that Conor is carrying, that's a heavy load. And that's part, it's one of the things that gets really hard as the champion when you're going through all of this and getting ready for a fight and having to do all of that work. It's not easy. And, you know, he handles it absolutely, you know, easily. He has no problem with it and it doesn't seem to affect him. So you got to give the guy props in everything that he does in the fight game, from promoting to training to the actual fight. He does it all.
In combat sports, to really be a superstar, you don't just have to win, you have to have a persona. Think about Conor McGregor. Think about Muhammad Ali. Think about Mike Tyson. Think about Ronda Rousey. You can have a huge persona, but if you don't get the victories and the spectacular victories, you're not going to get to that level. And then we talked a lot about the Klitschko brothers recently on our program, that I know they're big stars in Germany and in Ukraine, their native country, but in North America, they've kind of been non-entities because it's not that type of persona. It's got to be almost this perfect storm that makes you a superstar, but you have to have the results. Conor McGregor now 19-2 in his pro MMA career, 7-0 in the UFC with six finishes. But beyond all of that, he's doing the little things and the big things outside of fighting, selling himself, selling his fights, selling the UFC, selling the sport of MMA, which is really breaking him through to the next level. And let's be honest, the UFC and MMA, they need stars. It's not healthy for our sport of mixed martial arts when the biggest stars are people who are retired from the sport. And that's where I felt like we were maybe a year ago, 18 months ago. I'm not so sure I feel that way anymore.
Yeah, no, you know, I always say there's someone that's going to replace you. I don't give a fuck who you are or what job you do. I say it all the time. The president of the United States is replaced every 8 years at least. You know, leaders of this world get replaced. And so fighters are going to get replaced too. There's always going to be those fighters that connect with the people that once they leave, they still, the people, you know, still think about them, you know. And you got, you know, the Chuck Liddells who had a persona, and, you know, Chuck still carries his persona. And I just watching him over the weekend, you know, during the two shows that I was at, you know, he was at both of them. And to watch Chuck Liddell watch a fight it's a scene to see just undo itself because it's entertainment. He gets into more contortions and he starts moving and he becomes part of the fight. It's absolutely hysterical because in every essence, the guy is a fighter. And he's still living the fights while sitting on the outside of the cage through what these guys are doing. He's still working them. He's still feeling it. And he's still living it. And you got to love those guys. And people do. And he'll go on forever as one of the big stars of this sport. But there's always going to be new stars. And people are going to come up and they're going to start to capture people's attentions. You know, Chris Weidman, everyone was looking at him and, you know, he did an incredible job of coming up and building himself up to the point where he gets to fight Anderson because everyone's afraid of fighting Anderson. And he says, you know, this is the guy I want. And he goes and he beats him. Then he beats him again. You know, and then here comes Luke Rockhold. And, you know, Luke Rockhold is the guy that comes in and he beats Chris. And you know what? It's going to happen to Luke. Luke's going to lose somewhere along the way here, too. It's just part of the whole process of the fight game. you know, as people get older or more, you know, pressure occurs and they don't train the same, you never know when it's going to be, but there's got to be that evolution of the fighters, and there's going to be stars coming up. You know, you see some of them, you know, they try to build some guys up early. Robbie Lawler was a guy. Dana, in the very beginning, loved Robbie Lawler, and they tried to push him, and they actually pushed him too fast, and it was too much for him to handle. And how many years later is now Robbie Lawler that guy that they always thought he would be? You know, and sometimes, you know, you never know when it's going to be, but, you know, there's always going to be someone to come in and take over and take that mantle and push the sport forward.
Every week on Let's Get It On, we bring you our poll question. You can, of course, cast your vote on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Last week we asked you, do you believe that Ronda Rousey will retire from MMA if she loses to Holly Holm in next year's rematch? 61% of you voted yes. This week's poll question, do you feel that Conor McGregor is now the biggest star in MMA? Vote yes or no on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. For me, John, it's still Ronda Rousey, but Rousey is coming off of a pretty spectacular loss versus Holly Holm in Australia in November, and Conor McGregor is now coming off of a really spectacular win. To be a superstar, in my opinion, in any sport, you have to go outside of people who actually watch the sport. We've talked about my mom has seen Ronda Rousey, and she watches her son commentate fights, but my mom's hardly an MMA fan. But she sees Ronda Rousey on Entertainment Tonight and with Jimmy Fallon and with Ellen DeGeneres. So my mom has this awareness where she doesn't know, for instance, Bigfoot Silva, for instance, or Mark Hunt, or even George St. Pierre. When you break through like David Beckham did with soccer in the late 1990s and early and mid-2000s, you break through, everybody knows your name, even if they don't watch your sport. That's the next level. And I don't know if Conor McGregor is quite there yet, but I think he's very, very close to being there.
He's getting there. Look at it. You know, that's the one thing is, you know, media, Hollywood, whoever you want to say, you know, they love the type of personality that Conor brings. They love, you know, the cockiness, the brashness, the difference in him compared to the next guy and what he'll say, how he'll say it. It's what they're looking for. They want that. They feed off of it. You know, then you look at, you know, when Conor first came to the UFC, Bobby Razak, who does all kinds of different films and everything, he made this giant commercial thing, brought Conor into Los Angeles, put him in a Ferrari, filmed him driving around and saying, you know, this is the next star. You know, when honestly, you know, no one really knew, but Bobby Razak looked at it and said, I think I got a guy here, the way he talks, what he's doing, that, you know, I can get something early on him. And he did. And, you know, all media wants that one statement. They want that one thing that they can blast out there that they got from somebody that is going to get people's attention for them to, you know, come in and listen to what they're saying or, you know, watch what they're doing. Conor McGregor gets people's attention. And, you know, there's people that are going to love him because of what he says, and there's people that are going to hate him because of what he says. But, you know, Muhammad Ali long ago proved that I don't care if you love me or hate me. I care that you're watching me, because the more people that watch me, the more money I put in my pocket. Conor understands that. And Conor is doing a great job of bringing eyes to the UFC and to Conor McGregor fights. And that's what his job is.
And then fully agree, John, and in MMA and combat sports, in professional sports, team and individual, it's getting a reaction from a viewer, from a fan, from even a casual observer. They're passionate to see you win, or they're passionate to see you lose. Look at the New York Yankees, right? Look at the New England Patriots. Look at Manchester United. Look at Muhammad Ali. People care one way or the other. It's not, I don't really care. People are passionate one way or the other. Conor McGregor is certainly to that point right now.
Oh, yeah. And it doesn't matter what you know, when you look at, you know, certain sport teams, you look at the, you know, you look at baseball, more people know the name of the New York Yankees than they know of the Milwaukee Brewers. Okay. That's just the fact. That's just the way it is, because the Yankees are a team that, you know, they're just above a lot of the other teams out there just based upon media and media hits and the people talking about them. Same thing with, you know, the Dallas Cowboys when it comes to the NFL. You know, people that don't really watch the NFL know the name of the Dallas Cowboys when they probably wouldn't know the name of something like, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, and it's the same thing when you get to fighters. You know, there's a lot of people out there fighting, but there's certain names that get people's attention and they all of a sudden go, oh, I've heard that before. That's the person, you know, be it a Ronda Rousey, a Conor McGregor, you know, whoever. There's just names and that people start to catch on to and identify with, and they want to see that person. They want to hear that person. They want to know what that person's doing. And if you get to that point, which Ronda did and Conor's right at, that's what you're looking for as a fighter, because that's what's going to get you what you want.
So, John, we opened this segment with me giving you credit for your great stoppage, excellent positioning, timing, reading the fight, recognition.
Are you kidding? I knocked him out. People told me not.
Well, let's talk about social media. So aside from a lot of people going on social media saying the fight was worked, which I don't even know where to start on that. Again, if you and me ever work a fight, I'm either going to give you my ankle or my neck. I'm not going to let you knock me unconscious, because that's a bad end to a work. Yeah. Ridiculous. But so most people and people who know the sports are saying, wow, great job, Big John. But then you have people, and I sense it's people who don't really watch MMA, don't really even know who you are. You're just the referee. You were either too late or too early. Which is it, John? Come on. You either should have caught Aldo as he's falling, or you should have let him get decapitated and then McGregor beat his decapitated head around the cage.
Yeah, well, you know, look at again. You know, you're always going to have someone that, you know, feels like I could have done that better, or someone that feels like, you know what, you were wrong in this, you know, you did this. And hey, and this is no different when I talk about fighters, that, you know, when I say, you know, Ronda Rousey has to just look at what she did. Don't listen to everyone. You know, their comments don't mean anything. People are going to want you to fail. There's people that are going to want you to succeed. And if you're a referee, trust me, this is part of, you know, when we talk about the pressure that comes with things, it doesn't matter if you do things perfectly. There's going to be people that say, you fucked that up. You suck. You know, and if you allow those people to get to you, you're just being stupid. You know, you've got to be able to look at it and laugh and go, what a fucking moron. All right. Because there's a lot of morons out there. And it's a matter of have confidence in who you are, have confidence in what you do, and know that you're trying to do the very best job. And it's possible, because you're a human being, that you could screw this up. And so let's work to do the things right. So we're going to take and limit that as much as possible. But, you know, I had people that, you know, on social media is great, because people are going to say things on social media that they would never say to your face, because
never. You
know, they're cowards. But over social media, they'll be a big person. You know, over the internet, you know, they're going to say words that they would never say to a person's face. But hey, that's okay. That's what this world is now. And if you let that bother you, you're letting things bother you that you should never allow to get to you. I had people tell me, you know, that I was wrong for stopping that fight, that Aldo was getting up.
Oh my God.
And it's like, really? Okay. You know, great. I'm glad you thought so. And I had people saying that, you know what, you know, that I wasn't fast enough, that, you know, I wasn't ready. I was too far away, and that I wasn't ready for it. And, you know, I should always be ready. And you look and you go, I don't know how much more ready I could be. As soon as he fucking was going, you know, over, I was going in, and I'm looking at his face to make sure that, you know, I'm not going to sit there and come in and stop it, or I'm going to overrun and come around to let Conor, and, you know, attack him more if I think he can continue on. But, you know, and then I had people saying that it wasn't Conor McGregor that knocked out Jose Aldo. It was John McCarthy. So I want the featherweight belt.
Okay. Yeah, you trained very hard for that fight, and yeah, you scored the knockout. So there should be an asterisk when the Nevada State Athletic Commission turns in their official report. Or you get an assist, maybe.
It was a I actually had one guy say that was a 2-on-1 fight. You and Conor attacked Jose Aldo, so it wasn't fair. Yeah, you know, it's like Absolutely. Me and Connor, we met in the back. We made a deal, and I was going to help him because he was going to hurt him, and then I was going to come in and finish him off in a tag team style. That's what happened.
I really think, John, because on a fight like this, and the pay-per-view numbers aren't in, but it looks like it will finish as either first, second, or third all-time buy rate in North America for the UFC. The record, by the way, 1.6 million pay-per-view buys in North America, UFC 100, so it could top that. But on fights like this, you get a lot of people who aren't fight fans, who aren't MMA fans, who aren't UFC fans. They're very casual observers, or maybe they're watching at a bar or at a fight party, so they don't really know anything about you or the fighters or fighting or certainly our sport. So they're just weighing in with these really uninformed opinions. I think real fight fans or even casual fight fans know the score. They know what's up. It's these cranks, for lack of a better term, who just want to say something, like going back to the people who are saying that the fight was somehow worked. But yeah, it really upsets me. I get we talked about this just before we went on air. I get more upset when my friends are attacked than when I'm attacked personally. I just kind of roll my eyes if I am. It's like, okay, cool, you don't dig my commentary, whatever, that's fine. But when you're attacked, especially because you were flawless, and I don't use that word lightly, you were flawless in that fight, and you're still taking heat, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, but again, you know, taking heat is, it's all in what you do. You know, there's certain people that are important. And when I say people that are important, the people that are your peers that you respect, the people that you you share that, you know, job with, the people that walk in your shoes and their opinions, the people that you work for that, you know, are putting you into those positions and, you know, saying you're the person that I believe is going to do a good job here and giving it to you. Those are the people that are important. Those are the people that matter. Those are the people that, you know what, you want to perform well for, and you want to, you know, hey, what do you think? What do you think I could have done better? Was there something I should have done differently? Those are the ones that, you know, you care about. All the rest of them is everyone's got an opinion, okay? And it's okay. There's nothing wrong with them having opinion, but if you start to actually take their opinion and make it count, then you're, as the individual, not being too bright.
A lot of referees and aspiring referees listen to Let's Get It On, which we're very appreciative of. They need to understand, and I think all of you do understand, that if Big John McCarthy takes heat, be ready to take heat, because you are beloved in this sport, and yet it still comes at you. So everyone wants the big stage. Everybody wants the big fight, but be ready for the criticism, because it will come, even if you're flawless.
Yeah, it's funny because you get people all the time that they say things, and it's comical. You know, I've had people sit there and say, I don't understand, you know, why you get fights. I've been watching this sport from the beginning, and you've only been really working with the UFC since 2010.
That's right.
I'm like, yep, you're right. You know, you can't win, you know. There's always going to be someone with an opinion. Don't worry about it.
John, as a final point on this, so you have been an MMA referee since UFC 2, 1994. So all the keyboard warriors, all of the cranks, how many people have actually come up to you in person, to your face, and told you that you botched a fight?
Let's see.
Not fighters, I mean fans. How many fans have come up and said, you did this wrong, you ruined this fight, in 22 years now?
I'm being honest, I can't think of one.
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's the answer I was looking for.
But that's the whole point, because, you know, what they'll say when, you know, over a, you know, keyboard on their computer or their phone is a whole lot different than what they're going to say to your face in person.
And, you know, it's cool. Everybody has an opinion. Sure. Everybody has a right to your opinion. But remember, anytime you're attacking somebody, whether they're a private figure or public figure, it doesn't matter, famous, infamous, not famous, they're real people. And they might hear this stuff, or their kids or their wives or their moms. It's not great. So if you want to speak your mind, cool. But maybe just think about it first.
Yeah. You know, it's just, this is the, you know, society that we live in. Today, it's different. It's different than what we had in the past. You didn't have this type of, you know, if you go back into, you know, this 80s, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, we didn't have, you know, officials being attacked for things that they did. We didn't have, you know, athletes being, you know, criticized in the fashion that they are. And, you know, if an official was going to be criticized, it was the media that would criticize them over a situation, and it would come out in the paper or on, you know, one of the sports shows that happened once a week. But, you know, with ESPN and how things have changed and everything, you know, all these talk shows with sports, you know, critics and stuff, everything, you know, bumped up to a point. Then we got social media, and social media starts up, and, you know, you've had, you know, Christ, now you got what's, you know, all these different Vines, SpeakPipe, Twitter, you know, Facebook. Everybody has the ability to send something in some way, if you're going to be on one of those things, to you in a fashion that you can see it. And hey, that's okay. And if you sit there and you actually are going to give it credence, now you're talking about where you're losing your mind. Don't you can't sit there and worry about what some, you know, person. And I tell guys all the time, if you're worried about what the 14-year-old sitting on his computer at home is saying about you, you're not really dealing with this the right way.
See, the correct way to come after John and me is to email questions to this program. We encourage you to do that.
There you go.
You don't have to think that we're right. You just let us know what you think. But we have great listeners worldwide. We really enjoy your questions, so let's get to it. Remember, ask away via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. And now you can use the SpeakPipe app. Let your voice be heard literally and figuratively. It's on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. And as a reminder, I am the commentator who called last month's Murat Gafurov versus Narang Tungalog Jadamba fight in one championship.
Jesus.
So saying names, yeah, correctly means a great deal to me. So please include a pronunciation guide for your name. One championship. What a great experience that was. I really hope to be announcing I'm doing more with them. So much fun having those Mongolian names. That was great.
I'm glad you think that's fun.
Narang Tungalog Jadamba.
That's like someone saying, I'm enjoying my calculus class.
I would definitely never say that, believe me. Well, Patrick Gribben is someone who actually did include a pronunciation guide for his name. Thank you, Patrick.
He doesn't need one.
It is. I know, but I guess it could be Gribben. It's Gribben. Long time and very dedicated listener to our program. This is a really good, complex question. So he writes, John and Sean, you both follow Glory, so you can understand my disappointment when we learn that Spike will no longer carry their product. Patrick continues, Glory is awesome, but the fact is they don't really have any stars to build their brand with here in North America, save for possibly Joe Schilling. Glory has ESPN now, but do you guys think that perhaps UFC Fight Pass would be a better fit for them if they lose that deal? Kickboxing appears to be a niche market with a cult following that does not lend itself well to big TV stations, and Fight Pass subscribers are usually serious fight fans.
Well, you know, he's got it right. Is there's something about kickboxing, and I love kickboxing.
As you do know,
I love all, you know, the things that occur in the kickboxing fights in the world, but there is something about it that has never caught on with the average fan. There's something about it, you know, if you go back into the 70s and 80s with, you know, PKA and all these things, I don't know if it was the long pants at the time or, you know, that they didn't do leg kicks, but it never really caught on. And, you know, you had people that were trying to push it and it just kind of faded out. And then, you know, it's come back with K1, and K1 was trying to do things and it seemed like, oh, it's going to get there, but it just never went over internationally. It stuck in Japan for a while. It kind of, you know, had, you know, a couple of, you know, a couple thousand or, you know, whatever followers here in the States, but there's only certain countries that really appreciate kickboxing. You know, when you're getting into the, you know, the Dutch countries and Holland and places like that, they get it. Japan kind of gets it. The US, it just doesn't have enough for the fans, especially now with MMA. It's just never caught on. And I think, you know, he's absolutely right in when he sits there and he says, you know, they don't have any stars. And that's the biggest problem. You have got to have stars to push your sport forward. You got to have that person that is just absolutely dynamic. And although Glory has some incredible fighters, you know, you look at, you know, Verhoeven as the heavyweight champion, you look at Nicky Holzen, he's incredible. They're just not catching on the way they need to catch on. And the whole thing he's saying about, you know, the UFC Fight Pass, that actually because the people that are going to pay for that are actual fight fans. That may be a good place for Glory to be, but the problem is Glory needs money. You know, to put on these fights and to pay the fighters and stuff, you've got to have money coming in. And usually they're looking at, you know, putting it on a TV, you know, putting it, you know, on whatever, you know, broadcast system is going to put it out there. They want money from that broadcast system to put it out there because it helps pay for the fights. And I don't know if the Fight Pass is going to be giving them enough money for them to say that that would be worthwhile for them.
So Glory, since they moved from Spike to ESPN2, and it's also a digital platform opportunity with ESPN3, the Watch ESPN app, they've aired two events. So these television ratings numbers, now audience numbers from the U.S. and Canada, abysmal. 184,000 and 164,000. So to put that in perspective,
that's horrible.
In TV, the line of demarcation is really 200,000. Anything under 200,000 is, well,
death.
Not going to be around very long.
It's
most
dead.
Recent, John, the most recent ratings period, I pulled this off of a website I like a lot, a sports industry website called awfulannouncing.com. So they list the ratings, and people who are interested in this nerdy Awful Announcing, people who are interested in this nerdy minutia of TV ratings and rights deals like myself read this daily. So on Awful Announcing, I pull up the ESPN2 ratings. 69 of their programs last week drew over 200,000 viewers, and neither Glory has hit that. Neither Glory event has hit that mark. It's my understanding, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. This is what's called a barter deal in television. ESPN is not paying Glory to air the product. Glory is paying their own production. They're giving the content to ESPN in exchange for some advertising of available opportunities and more importantly, a platform. But it's not as though ESPN is writing a check the way that ESPN writes a check to, say, the Big 12 Conference or the National Football League. It's a vehicle. It's a platform of television.
Absolutely. You know, the biggest thing that people don't understand, it's like, you know, why did Spike TV drop them? Well, Spike TV dropped them because of those ratings that you're talking about. Spike TV needs to have advertisers, and the advertisers don't want to be put on during a show that is doing under, you know, 250,000 views. They say, why are you putting on my product in a time slot that, you know, you've got only 130,000 viewers? You know, they can put on Cops in a rerun, and the viewership is going to go up into the 400,000s, and it's not costing them anything. They can run that damn stupid cop show over and over and over, and it's costing them nothing, and they still get their advertisers. Well, the Glory show actually cost them. This is nothing but, you know, basic finance. You know, if you're not bringing those eyes and viewerships to that, you know, tube, they're not going to want to put you on.
Next question comes from Andy McKnight, who's in Conor McGregor's home city, Dublin, Ireland. Andy happily sent a pronunciation guide for both his first and his last name that made me laugh. Cheers for that, Andy. Good question, John. I like this. At UFC 52, John, in the John Jones versus Vitor Belfort fight, early in the bout, Vitor catches Jones in a tight armbar. In trying to escape the hold, Jones stood upright and picked Vitor up for a couple of seconds. Would it have been legal for Jones to soccer kick Vitor in the head in that situation?
Soccer kick him in the head. I love how people come up with this stuff. It's like, how are you going to soccer kick him in the head while you have a, you know, let's be honest, 200 and some, you know, 220 pound, we'll say, guy hanging off of your arm. All right, let's go. Can you do it? Would it be legal? Yes, it would be legal if you could actually take and while that guy is hanging on your arm, stand on one leg and try to kick him to the head. If he's off of the ground, yes, it would be a legal kick. Okay.
Because they're not a grounded fighter.
But could someone actually do it? Fuck no. And, you know, it's just, you know, when you're looking at things, you know, it's a matter of not only is it the technique, could I actually, you know, think of someone possibly doing that as far as being able to pull it off and actually get their foot off of the ground and hit them in the head? There's a possibility someone could. Could they do it with power? No. You know, it's like, and when your arm is getting torqued, it's not the first thing that's coming to your mind is, I'm going to try to do this. So could he do it? Yes, he could have if he could have pulled it off. Could he have pulled it off? He's not pulling it off.
Remember, email us your questions, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Submit them on our website via SpeakPipe and on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Or you can just be a random crank and attack both of us on Twitter, which I don't think any of our good listeners around the world do. I think those are the people who don't actually listen to MMA podcasts or watch fighting on a regular basis. John, you were great in that fight. I'm glad you have such a good attitude about all this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Still to come on this week's episode of Let's Get It On, Big John and I will discuss what now stands as perhaps the biggest week in UFC history. 3 fight cards and 34 bouts over 3 straight days in Las Vegas, culminating in the Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo main event at UFC 194. And we'll follow up on our explosive and at times contentious interview from last week's program with Trisha Morrison, the widow of the late heavyweight boxer Tommy Morrison, who told us why she's filed a lawsuit to prove that her husband was misdiagnosed with the HIV virus in 1996, which effectively ended his boxing career. With Big John McCarthy, I'm Sean Wheelock, and you are listening to Let's Get It On.
Hey, this is Darren Pang, alongside my partner Kelly Chase here on Chasing Pucks with Panger. This is our NHL podcast, and it's on NHLpodcast.com, and it's damn good. It's really good. So you got to listen up. Make sure you download us. Make sure you figure it out. Anything you want to know about the NHL, stories, we got lots of stories. Chaser, do we have lots of stories?
We got stories, folks. Title in, you're going to love it. Buckle up. We came back to St. Louis. Scott Pellerin was living in my house. He was living in my house, sitting in my stall in the locker room, wearing number 39. Okay, they just gave him that number at the start of the year. We're going to have the home opener. I said to him, don't move into my house just yet because there's a small chance I'm going to get traded back to St. Louis. So don't move in today. I'll know by 3 o'clock. But the movers are coming. I said, Scotty, just... He moved in. I got traded 3:30 that day. So I'm driving back to St. Louis. I phone Scott Pellerin. I come back in the morning for the home opener. I come down. His stuff is in my stall.
39
take 39 from him, take my stall from him, take my house back. Poor kids out and out. Strike 1, 2 and boom. Back to the cage, kid.
No kidding.
Oh, great guy too, Scotty Pellerin.
Hey guys, it's the Ocho Man with the show Ocho Man Behind the 8-Ball. What can I say? This show covers it all from sports, politics, whatever's out there of interest. We cover it all. Our co-host, we got Darman. I definitely feel that he's got a bomb shelter somewhere with right-wingers hanging out ready to take over the world. And on the other end here, I got Nick. Nick's an alien. I really believe that Nick landed on this planet to re-educate us all, you might say. Again, check our show out every Friday. I'm sure you'll love it. Also, to find out more about our show, go to ochoman.com. I'm sure you won't be disappointed.
Behind the 8-Ball. All my life, that's where I've been.
Don't matter. You can't have it on a plane.
You're on the Polar Express. You're on a
sled. I'm saying that they keep it with them traditionally or whatever. You can't have that on a train or a plane or anything like that. Fuck you. I don't care what you got. I don't want you with a knife on a train or a plane or anything.
Are you okay with the beard?
I'm okay with the beard. You can have your beard, but just don't dunk it in my soup or anything.
Real bad luck. That's the card.
It's the book that every MMA fan should own. It's soon to be a major motion picture, and it's now available directly from the UFC's official website. Is This Legal? The inside story of the first UFC from the man who created, written by UFC founder Art Davey and my broadcast partner Sean Wheelock, with the foreword by me, Big John McCarthy, is available for purchase right now online at the UFCstore.com. That's right, the UFCstore.com is what you need to go to. Then type the word books into the search box and place your order. You need to learn the true and previously untold version of how the UFC was really started. If you're a fan of the UFC, you need to know how this all came about. It's a fast-paced book that names names and holds nothing back. Is This Legal is the inside story of the first UFC Again, written by the man who created it, Art Davey, and it's available for purchase right now at the UFCFightStore.com. Go get it.
When looking for new and exciting clothing concepts, look no further than Lambs to Lions. Lambs to Lions has great designs that incorporates the past from boxing with the new and exciting evolution of MMA. We all start out as lambs, but with time, training, and hard work, we can all become lions. Be part of the Lambs to Lions movement and check out all of their great designs. You can get your Lambs to Lions gear at the Las Vegas Fight Shop or go to lambstolionsbrand.com.
Now, back to Let's Get It On with your hosts, Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
The Ultimate Fighting Championship, under the leadership and guidance of Art Davey and Horion Gracie, held its first event on November 12, 1993. Since its launch, the UFC has perhaps never had a bigger week than what occurred last week in Las Vegas. Three fight cards, 34 total bouts over three straight days, culminating in Conor McGregor's first-round knockout victory versus Jose Aldo. John, the sheer volume of not just the fights, but to me, the quality of fights and the quality of fighters really speaks now to the depth and, quite frankly, the audacity of the UFC.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, the thing you look at to pull off three shows in 3 days. You know, a lot of average, you know, fight fans and stuff are like, oh, that's just great. And they don't think about the complexity of actually making that happen. And, you know, the only thing that could have made it worse is doing the three shows in different cities. You know, they did two of the shows in one location and one of the shows in another. But it's amazing what they pulled off. And what the other part that's really amazing about it is, in those three shows, they had outstanding fights throughout all of them. And that is exactly what you said. That's what speaks to the depth of the UFC. And, you know, this is what I always say, you know, all these people talking about fighters and, you know, these organizations, and they try to sit there and say, oh, you know, that person's no good. You know, they're not in the UFC. No, there's some incredible fighters that are not in the UFC. But what the UFC has is a depth of fighters in each weight division that is just incredible. You know, the thing that's really funny, if you look at it now that I'm thinking about it, you know, if I ask you, Sean, right now, all right, who's the heavyweight champion of the UFC?
You're asking me rhetorically, obviously.
No, who's the heavyweight champion of the UFC?
It is Fabricio Werdum.
Where did he come from?
He came from Strikeforce.
Okay, who's the light heavyweight champion?
I know. It's all the Strikeforce guys piling in.
But the Strikeforce, when Strikeforce was here, it sucked. It's not near as good as the UFC. And you try to tell people all these things about, no, look it, there's some fantastic fighters. But if you're going to ask me even now, what was the difference between Strikeforce and the UFC? Strikeforce had some great fighters. They just didn't have the depth of the UFC. And that's what makes the UFC what it is. The depth of all the weight classes, and some of them are just absolutely nuts. You'll get some, you know, the heavyweights and stuff, there's a depth of the first, you know, 10 that are there that it's really good. And then it wanes off. And that's just because, you know, look at, we just don't get as many big guys, you know, in this sport as we do lighter guys, because there's other sports that the big guys can play. But you look at the lightweights and the flyweights, and you look at these guys in these, you know, weight classes, they're in the middle. My God, there's some talent. It's incredible what the UFC has. And, you know, you look at the fights that occurred, you know, but, you know, you can look at the Paige Van Zandt and, you know, Rose Namajunas fight. Fantastic, fantastic main event fight, you know, that is, you know, women's MMA, that just proves how good women's MMA is with everything that they were doing. And then you go to the next night, you know, Tony Ferguson fights Edson Barboza. What an incredible fight. Oh, my God. It was incredible. What Tony Ferguson did in that fight was amazing. And what Edson Barboza was doing was amazing. The techniques and the things that he was doing in that fight, what he was hitting Tony with, you know, you sometimes on TV, you can't actually understand how hard someone's getting hit. Tony Ferguson was walking through baseball bat type hits. He was just putting a pressure on someone that was absolutely blasting the fuck out of him and continuing to move forward. How tough of an individual is Tony Ferguson? And then, you know, they gave you Frankie Edgar against Chad Mendes. Oh my God. You know, what do you expect? That's only the number, you know, 2 and 3 featherweight in the world right now in the UFC. It's like, Jesus Christ, what an incredible card that they gave you and that you didn't have to pay for. And then you get the next night, man, that, you know, for 3 nights of fighting, it's incredible what they pulled off.
So UFC Fight Night last Thursday, which was on Fight Pass, then the Ultimate Fighter finale on Friday, which was on FS1 in North America. And then on Saturday, pay-per-view for the main card, FS1 in North America for the prelims, UFC 194. And I use the word audacity because it's audacious just to be able to think that we can pull that off and then to go beyond and actually pull it off. So much talent. And to your point with Strikeforce, and I think about this with my former, well, Spike was my employer, but my former company, I commentated for 5.5 years, Bellator, and with World Series of Fighting. There's a lot, and I mean a lot of talent and A-plus level talent in both organizations, but look at depth. Just try to go 1 through 5 in the UFC, your personal rankings, every weight class. Now do that with Bellator. Now do that with World Series of Fighting, and I think you'll understand exactly where I'm coming from. It's the depth of the UFC that they can put in 2 fighters and either have that top 15 ranking, and they're still really good and really well-known to fight fans.
That's it, you know, and it's, you know, there's no other organization right now that could have pulled off what the UFC pulled off with those 3 shows.
Nor even tried, John. And that's where we go back to being audacious. Nor even thought that we can do this.
And then, you know what? I'm going to give credit. You know, no one thinks about this. You got to give credit to the Nevada State Athletic Commission being able to pull off what they do with that. All of the things that are going on, all of the dealing with medicals, all of the dealing with weigh-ins, all of the dealing with having inspectors and everything that's going on, they freaking did an incredible job of handling an incredibly difficult situation and doing it flawlessly.
10 years ago, 2005, John, you asked me about Fabricio Werdum. For a second, I thought there was an injury you were catching me up. So let me see if I can get you on this one. How many events do you think that the UFC staged in 2005? Total cards.
Oh my God, 2005, when, you know, that's the beginning of the Ultimate Fighter. I would tell you that probably somewhere in the area of 12 to 14.
10.
There you go. See, I was close, dude. Come on.
We're very close. You didn't hitch like I did on Werdum, thinking, wow, what's happened to Fabricio Werdum? 10 years ago, they did 10 events. And now at the end of 2015, they do 3 cards and 3 very good cards in a span of 3 days. And they're still not done for the year. They still have another show to go. That is where the sport has changed so much, is that depth of roster. I'm a big fan, and people who remember me from BBC and the World Football Phone-In or Major League Soccer, they know I'm a big fan of the English Premier League. And when you look at the big clubs in England, whether it's Manchester United or Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea, you look at the depth of the squads. There are players who cannot get a first team match who are starters for their national side. They could be starting in a World Cup match, and yet they can't even play on a Saturday or a Sunday because the depth is so great. And that's what separates a league like the Premier League from Major League Soccer. And I think that's what separates the UFC from everybody else in the world. It's not the talent at the top. It's the talent at the top, in the middle, and at the bottom.
Absolutely. You know, and that's, people don't get it, but it is so true. And then, you know, you're bringing up soccer, which I don't watch that much, but I understand the difference between Major League Soccer and the Premier League. And you know, there's just a difference when you get into not those top stars. Those guys are there and they're playing, and they're going to play on their national teams. They're going to play on the Premier League teams, if, you know, that's what they're part of. But man, there's the depth of talent that is just incredible in the UFC. The depth of just good fighter after good fighter after good fighter, that this guy on a given day can beat anybody. Man, that goes, you know, in some of these, you know, you go into the lightweights, Christ, you know, it's a murderer's row. It's so hard to get through some of these, you know, fights that some of these guys have, and then to continue on and go after the next guy to try to get towards that championship run. You know, look at Donald Cerrone. He's the one that's going to be fighting this week coming up. He's got the title match against, you know, Dos Anjos. And look at all of the fights and look at all the guys that he fought to get there. It's absolutely amazing.
I would use an example of a fighter who I'm good friends with, fellow Kansas City, and I've known him 10 or 12 years, James Krause. I think James Krause is great. Look at where James
Fantastic
Krause
fighter. In.
Fantastic fighter. You know him very well. You're friendly with him. You've refereed him a number of times. James is a great guy. He's a great fighter. But look at James Krause's place in the big picture of the UFC. Now move James Krause with his talent, with his ability, with his personality to any other fighting organization in the world and think how much different it would be for James Krause. He's either wearing a title or he's about to fight for a title.
Oh, you know, it's absolutely close. You know, yeah, I wouldn't have the rankings in front of me, but if I pulled them up, you know, and where he's at, James Krause is somewhere, you know, in the lightweight division of the UFC. He's probably going to end up somewhere ranked around, you know, somewhere in the 30s, maybe in the 20s, you know, right now, off based upon his win-loss record and what he's done, you know, in the show. But he's had some fights that, you know, he's had fights that he's lost, you know, that I personally did that, you know, I thought he won. You know, and every guy's going to have those. And, you know, he's got to work his way through those. But if you took James right now and put him in World Series of Fighting, you know what? They're going to put him in a title fight. He's going to go against Justin Gaethje because that's going to be the best fight they can put forward at this time. And if you put him in Bellator, he's going to be in the top 10 easy in Bellator, probably top 5 in Bellator.
Top 5.
And one, you know, one fight away from, you know, actually getting a title fight. You know, and again, that's just that difference in depth. You know, and that's what separates the UFC from the other ones right now.
Something that I think it's overlooked is the television partnership with Fox Sports. When the UFC decided to leave Spike and go to Fox Sports, because Fox Sports has thrown so much of their promotional weight and really largely their identity of FS1 and FS2, their two cable channels, meant to compete against the ESPNs of ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN Classic, ESPN News, that so much of that programming is based on the UFC. So they have a television partner saying, give us more content, because they're consistently some of our top-rated, if not our absolute top-rated shows. So it's moved from this pay-per-view model with the Ultimate Fighter to where there's the encouragement, let's do as many fights as possible. I don't think we're far off, John, from seeing basically like the old Tuesday night fights on USA Network, where you're going to have a UFC fight card every week or almost every single week on FS1.
Well, you know, I think the one thing that, you know, you're seeing, and I give credit to the UFC for, is there was a spot about 2 years ago where they were doing a lot of pay-per-views. And it wasn't just the UFC 194, 195, 196 that was pay-per-views. They had other ones in there to a point, it seemed like. And, you know, they were asking us to almost, in my view at the time, as a fan of the sport and as someone that actually, you know, buys the pay-per-views, they were asking me to basically select, okay, am I going to buy this pay-per-view over this pay-per-view? Because I'm not going to do both. I don't have the money to do both. I'm going to figure out which one I'm going to buy. So they were actually working against themselves, and that doesn't work for any company. And so the one thing that, you know, you see now is if they're doing 45 or 50 shows a year, the only ones that are pay-per-views are those numbered ones. And with all of the play they're getting on Fox and Fox Sports One, with what they're doing, they're building stars and building the ability for people to watch these guys for free and to get some kind of idea of who they are, what they are, and have a, you know, someone that says, I will pay to watch that guy fight, and then take that guy from those Fox shows or Fight Pass shows and then put them into the pay-per-view, and people want to see him fight. They'll pay to see him fight. That's smart business. That's what you're looking for.
John, as a final point on this, so we were talking about 10 years ago, 2005, the UFC held a total of 10 fight cards. Just moving back 20 years to 1995, when I was a kid, I didn't work in this industry. I bought every single pay-per-view, or more correctly, my mom gave me the money to buy every single pay-per-view. Okay. It was a treat. It really felt like a holiday. It was so special because there was no other MMA to watch. There was no MMA to watch live. There was no other MMA to watch on television. You had to wait for those UFC pay-per-views, and it was a big deal. There's so much content now, and I know some people, because everyone wants to be a contrarian at some point in their lives, will gripe and say there's too much content. I think polar opposite. It's amazing that there's so much content. You don't have to watch everything, but that you don't also have to go 3 or 4 months between pay-per-views. I think what a great time for MMA, and what a great time to work in the industry and be a fan.
Yeah, because, you know, back then, I think in 1995, they did 4 or 5 shows. You know, and so, you know, people don't remember, but there was 4 or 5 shows for the year.
Right.
You know, and it was, you know, the only thing they could do is, you know, they'd have a show, have the, you know, the champion, you know, whatever it was, you know, if it was, you know, Royce Gracie ends up winning, you know, the tournament. Well, to watch him again, you had to wait until that next one, which was going to be a couple of months down the road, if he was fighting in it, or if he was, they were going to move him to the next one. You know, it was this whole thing that, you know, you just didn't get a whole lot of it. And so when they came on, they were special. And then it got to the point with, you know, how big the UFC was getting and stuff, that the fights, you know, in a lot of ways were not that special anymore. And once fights aren't special, people lose interest. So you've got to make them special. So, you know, what you're seeing now with the UFC is the marketing that they're doing is really smart as far as how they're bringing fighters up, you know, who they're putting, you know, a promotion behind, and what they're doing as far as getting people's attention on them. They're using Fight Pass, they're using Fox Sports One, and then they're using the Fox big shows to really get people's attention on certain fighters, and then they're bringing those fighters into the big pay-per-views, and people are paying money to see them because they're worth it at that time. You know, and that's just smart. You know, have you been able to see Conor McGregor on Fox Sports? Yes, you have. You know, you've seen him for free. He has fought on shows that you didn't have to pay for. And then they bring him into the big pay-per-views because now people are willing to pay money to see him. That's their job as a promoter. That's, you know, promote that fighter and have that fighter get to the point where people want to see him and they'll pay money. That's how you make money. That's smart promotion. That's why the UFC is doing what it's doing.
Last week here on Let's Get It On, Big John and I spoke exclusively with Tricia Morrison, the widow of Tommy Morrison. Tommy Morrison was, of course, one of boxing's top heavyweights in the 1990s, and who in 1996, at the age of 27, tested positive for the HIV virus prior to his scheduled bout versus Arthur Stormy Weathers in Las Vegas, which resulted in Morrison's immediate suspension by the Nevada Commission, a suspension which has never been rescinded. Our interview with Patricia Morrison was heated, contentious, controversial, and at times even inflammatory. You can hear it in full, as well as all of our past episodes, completely free of charge on our website, Let's Get It On Podcast.com. As our conversation with Tricia Morrison has generated the biggest response ever from our listeners worldwide, it's also our most listened to program ever. We've also received a great deal of media coverage. John, I felt like we needed to kind of put an end cap on this, revisit this interview one more time. I'll tell you, for me, I almost turned spectator. I was fascinated by the...
No, really. Shit, you turned spectator. You didn't say a freaking word, man.
I introduced the segment and closed it. But, I mean, you were... For someone who's trained in law enforcement, you sounded like a real journalist. And what was fascinating to me as I was listening, when you asked Tricia Morrison, you asked her again and again, and this is really, I think, what's popped more than anything for everybody, including myself. You asked Tricia Morrison, do you believe that there is such a thing as the HIV virus and AIDS? That was just incredible.
What was incredible was her answer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm sorry, you know, that's what surprised me. And that she had said something that, you know, that popped it in my head. I don't think she believes that this is really out there. And that's why I asked her, and then she didn't give me an answer. And then I kind of got caught off guard and got caught up with what she was saying, and then realized, you know, she never answered me. And so I asked her again, you know, and again, I don't mean to, you know, to put down or to say anything bad about anybody. That's not my purpose. You know, I went into that interview, you know, I was saying, well, I'm not going to ask her much because I don't want to.
You said you weren't going to ask a single question.
Yeah, then she was going on her Teddy Atlas run where she wasn't stopping. I had to do something, but you know, I don't want to, you know, cause a problem for, you know, someone who's lost somebody. You know, she's the widow of Tommy Morrison, but you know, the more that she spoke, the more that, you know, it became very clear to me, you know, yes, she's the widow of Tommy Morrison, but she was married to Tommy long after Tommy's boxing career was over. And, you know, she's trying to make claims that his boxing career was taken away from him. That's not true. His boxing career was not taken away from him. You know, state athletic commissions have a responsibility to everybody. They have a responsibility to, you know, Tommy Morrison as a boxer. They have a responsibility to every boxer that could possibly come in contact with Tommy Morrison or anything that Tommy has, or any official that could come into contact with Tommy or anything that Tommy has. And, you know, they have more than just one person to think about. And when you sit, they sit there and they test, she's wanting to say that I want the name of the person that diagnosed Tommy Morrison with HIV. And that's not what a state athletic commission does. They don't diagnose anybody. They do a test and they're asking for a negative test from a lab. And when I say negative test, if you don't give them a test, you haven't given them a negative test, so they're not going to let you fight. They're not saying that they are looking for anything to say, well, I want to know exactly what someone has. But if they test you and it doesn't come back negative, they're not going to let you fight. And they're going to say, hey, you have to go, you know, do something about this and make sure that there's a reason that it's coming up, you know, that you possibly have something here. Now, it's incumbent upon, you know, the person, Tommy Morrison, to go get that taken care of. And if Tommy at the time wants to take, you know, a single test and say, okay, that's the end, I'm done, he can do that. That's his right. That's his choice. But no one made him do the things that he did. It's free will. All right. She had nothing to do with him at that time. She meets him and marries him, you know, how many years later, you know, past 10. And then, you know, he tells her these stories and stuff. Well, the real problem that I have and what I was trying to get, you know, put out there is, what is the reason for your lawsuit? Because she has a lawsuit and she has filed a lawsuit. And, you know, under Freedom of, you know, Information Act, you can kind of get those papers and look at them. And I looked at some of them because I became interested with some of the stuff that she said. And when you're looking at them and stuff, she's filing this lawsuit. She said that she just wants these people to say that they were wrong. Well, that's part of her lawsuit. She does. She wants there to be a press conference where people publicly apologize for saying that, you know, Tommy was diagnosed with HIV, even though none of the people she's suing diagnosed him with HIV. Okay, that's not what they did. When Mark Ratner's name is in the, you know, a lawsuit, Mark Ratner's not a doctor, and Mark Ratner is not going to diagnose someone. He was an executive director of an athletic commission that was mandated by laws and regulations in that state to test Tommy Morrison for certain things to make sure that he is a safe competitor for his opponent. And they did that. And when they did it, the test came back that it couldn't come back negative, and so they couldn't let him fight. And on top of the apologies, she wants $110 million. Now let's get to the truth of why she's doing this. She wants money. And that's what I was trying to bring out. That's what I was trying to get her to say, because this is about money. It's a money grab. And when Tricia Morrison can sit there and say anything she wants that money. How was she affected in a negative way with anything that happened back in 1996 with Tommy Morrison when she didn't even know him? She wasn't affected in a negative way. If she was trying to get, you know, people to come out and say, hey, you know, we think we were possibly wrong for diagnosing Tommy, I don't care. That's fine. Go ahead. When you throw the dollar figure in there, you're telling me the reasons for why you're doing what you're doing.
Nathan Hendrickson, who you know very well, John, good friend of mine. He's also one of our most loyal listeners. He's a huge MMA fan, and he happens to be an outstanding attorney based in Oklahoma.
He's tried a number of
federal cases. Now, he independently reviewed the court filings. We did not pay him. He did this on his own in Patricia Morrison's federal lawsuit, all of which are public record. So what Nathan has done for us and for all the listeners of Let's Get It On, he's written a summary. We have it posted on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com, also on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/Let's Get It On Podcast. You can read it now. It's not his opinion. It's a legal summary of the facts of the case. So here are a few notes. She originally filed this in U.S. federal court July 2014. She filed an amended complaint in October of this year, and the case is currently moving forward. It's in the discovery phase.
Hold on. I want you to say, why did she file an amended petition in October of 2015?
The defendants, and John, you come out of law enforcement. I'm someone who botched Kipling's name as a failed English major from a state university. I'll do a summary, but truthfully, with your law enforcement background and training and criminal justice background, you can probably say it more succinctly than I can. Basically, there was a motion, as I understand it, to dismiss from the defendants. She was told by the federal court judge she needs to go back. She needs to recertify certain things, if that's the correct term, essentially clean up her complaint, make it a little more streamlined. And that's when she filed this amended complaint in October 2015. Is that fair?
That's fair, because really she's put out this lawsuit, but there's statutes and there's limitations, and she's trying to do this giant web when that's not what the law permits. And so when she came back with her amended form, what's the difference?
I'm not sure that I know the answer to that.
There's not any difference. She came back with almost the exact same thing.
I thought so. I was reading these public filings, it seemed like the exact same thing. I didn't really understand how it was amended, but I thought that was just me.
No, that's because I don't believe that Trisha Morrison has an attorney on her side doing this.
Well, that's in forgive me, I don't know if you say pro se or pro se, but it's the term
pro se
that you're doing this without a lawyer. So, and that's something Nathan Hendrickson discovered for us. Patricia Morrison is doing all of this without a lawyer.
Why is that?
It's got to either be money or no one will take her case. It's got to be one of the two, right?
Well, any lawyer is going to take a case if you're going to pay him. They don't care if they win. What do they care about?
Yeah, they care about the money. So okay. Then you're saying you either do this pro bono or you're doing this on contingency where you're going to get what, I guess a third. Would that be right?
Third? Yes. As a lawyer, you could get 33 1/3% of whatever is won from the case if the case is won.
And but so far, she has not secured a lawyer. I'm fascinated, too, because aside from Nathan Hendrickson, I know we have a lot of attorneys who listen to our program, what their legal views are on this. I know it's a really hot topic. I'm curious if the attorneys in our listening audience, from what they've heard and what they've read, I'm not advocating for saying they should. I'm just wondering, hypothetically, if they would want to take on her case, knowing what they know and having heard this interview last week.
Yeah, I don't think many are going to want to take that. Yeah, there's just nothing there, you know. I don't mean to belittle someone's, feelings or their beliefs, but there's just not anything there for her to sue over. No one was, no one did anything in a way that you can bring out and say there was a conspiracy against Tommy Morrison. You know, Tommy Morrison was prepared to fight Stormy Weathers in Nevada, and he was actually, he was in the dressing room when Mark Ratner went and said, you can't fight. And they took his license and suspended it. That's where he found out that the test came back and there was not a negative on it. So he was going to have to do something about it. So is that good for the promoter that Tommy doesn't get to fight? That's not good for the promoter. The promoter's already done what?
It's terrible.
He's marketed. He's put out all kinds of money and publicity and everything. That's killing him. So is it that the promoter wanted that to happen? No, the promoter doesn't want it to happen. Does the Nevada State Athletic Commission want that to happen? No.
They're losing revenue. Why would they want that to happen?
Exactly. And so you're looking, you're going, well, where's the reason for someone to want to do this? There is none. Okay? There is none. It doesn't make sense.
Well, John, that's where I think so many, forgive me for interrupting, but that's where I think that so many conspiracies fall apart, conspiracy theories. You have to look at motivations. I'm of the firm belief that all human actions are driven by human motivations. And Patricia Morrison, I asked her point blank. I said, do you think that this is a conspiracy, incompetence, or a little of both? And I don't know that she really gave us a full answer. I'm still not clear what she thinks this is, but if one were to say this was a conspiracy, why would they conspire to get Tommy Morrison out of boxing when he's a very bankable heavyweight who also is seen as someone who can be knocked out? So he's a very attractive opponent, and yet to the upper echelon of heavyweights at that time, he's not necessarily a feared opponent. What he is though, someone who's going to sell a lot of pay-per-view buys.
Yeah, there you go. You can actually market him, and he's going to put butts in the seats. That's the guy that I want to get out of here. It just doesn't work that way.
If you were to spin a conspiracy, and again, I'm not alleging anything. I want to be clear on that. But if you were to spin a conspiracy, the conspiracy would be the other way. That the conspiracy would be to suppress an HIV positive test and to turn it negative so Tommy Morrison could continue to fight and could continue to sell tickets and pay-per-views and generate income for promoters and other fighters and athletic commissions. Wouldn't that be the logical conspiracy?
Yeah. That's not what happened. You know, I don't know. It's, again, I look at it and, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, someone is standing behind someone and believing in them, whatever, you know, there is there, and she wants to believe, you know, whatever it is about Tommy, that's awesome. But, you know, the lawsuit won't bring Tommy back. The lawsuit won't change anything. It's not going to change anything that has occurred. It's not going to make people look at the situation differently. All it really is going to do is cause lawyers to make money, because there's lawyers that are getting paid on the other side to have to defend their clients. And she's trying to make, you know, $110 million that she's going to put in her bank account because she was so wrongly, you know, abused by this situation. No, she wasn't abused. She wasn't wrongly done. No one did anything in any fashion to her because she wasn't even part of the situation, you know, when it occurred. And, you know, some things, you know, I don't know. Some things are just wrong. And I've always had a problem with, you know, this big compensation of money for people. If you care about someone and something is done that's wrong towards them, that money's not going to bring anything back. It's not.
When I met Patricia Morrison, and again, it's weird how the world works. It was completely random when and how I met her, and then I followed up, and she found out what I did for a living. I found her, and I still find her, intensely likable, and I think she's a very bright person. She just holds views that really seem to be outside of generally accepted views or the mainstream, and she really vocalized her points. I still see whatever she's advocating. I think it's admirable that she's continuing to fight on this. I do see something admirable in that, but there are just a lot of weird things surrounding this situation. There are a lot of weird things. I just keep going back to when you asked her and asked her and asked her again, do you think there is something that's the HIV virus or AIDS? And she wouldn't answer you directly. Her first response was, it's not important what I think, or it's irrelevant what I think.
Yeah.
I can't get past that.
Oh, come on. And then she said she wanted to see it. She wanted to see it in person. What is it going to do for you to see it in person? What's that going to do? How's that going to change anything? You can go on the internet right now and see an electron microscope's view, a picture of what the HIV virus, looks like. Does that change anything for me? Will that change anything for her? No. You know, to sit there and say, I want to see it. Well, you can't see it with the freaking naked eye. The eye can't pick it out. Okay, so you do have to see it under an electron microscope, okay? Yes, there are computer animated, you know, views of it that you can see. And she's saying, well, that's not real. I don't know what you want to say something is real, but I know there's enough people in this world that have suffered from a disease called HIV/AIDS and have died from that disease that I can't sit there and go off and say, well, it doesn't exist. My God, you are negating all of those people's lives. You can't do that.
Regardless of what people believe, did Tommy Morrison have or didn't have HIV? Did he die of full-blown AIDS? Was there a conspiracy? Was there incompetence? Regardless of where you're listening around the world, what you believe, the reality is that Tommy Morrison died at age 44. And the last 20 years of his life were a lot different than what they were projected to be when he was in Rocky V and when he started knocking people out. I think because there were so many great heavyweights in the 1990s and because of his tragic end and abrupt end to his career, people forget how good he was. Again, the top heavyweights didn't fear him. He was beaten mercilessly and knocked out by Ray Mercer. Michael Bent knocked him out. Lennox Lewis made him look like a C-level fighter. But he had some great wins. And against fighters who were at his level or a little above or a little below, he had a tendency to decimate them. He was a really exciting fighter. And as I talked about, I didn't know him that well, but I knew him a little bit. I really liked him. The tragedy in all of this is that he died at age 44 and he did not fulfill the potential in and out of the ring that seemed to be right there for him in the early 1990s.
That is exactly the whole point of it. You know, a guy died at the age of 44. You know, in this day and age, people are not supposed to die at the age of 44, you know, especially healthy, athletic guys, you know, at one time, as healthy and as strong as Tommy Morrison was. You don't ever want to see him, you know, get decimated by diseases and stuff. There's a lot of things that, you know, that occurred, you know, and Trisha said things that, you know, sparked an interest in me as far as when she said things. You know, she said, you know, he got infected by a bug bite. Well, if you live in our world, the fighting world, you live in the world of, you know, gyms and things, bug bites are not a common thing for someone. Now, I have been misdiagnosed, if you want to call it diagnosed, with a bug bite that it's staph, it's MRSA, it's MRSA. And that's a serious, serious, you know, thing. And it can affect you in a bad way. And, you know, when she said bug bite or tick bite, I was like, oh, that doesn't sound. I have people all the time saying, I got this bug bite. And I look at it and go, dude, you got MRSA. That is not a bug bite. That is a staph infection. That is bad. You need to get to a doctor now. You know, and when she said that, and she said he had a hole in his chest, it's exactly what we've seen from other fighters. You know, there's pictures on the internet. Go look at Kevin Randleman. Go look at what happened to him with MRSA.
It was awful.
You know, go look at, you know, Drew McFedries lost the back, you know, part of his hamstring area because of it. There's a lot of fighters out there that have been infected with, you know, staph infections and MRSA that everyone thought was a bug bite, a spider bite, a brown recluse spider. You hear Jeremy Horn had it. You know, I've had it. It's something, you know, when you're in the fighting world, you can get just, you know, being in the gym, you know, dirty mats, you know, dirty, you know, equipment, things can happen. Man, you know, all these things add up. They sound, you know, like, oh, it's, you know, this conspiracy. No, it's normal things that happen with people, but if they're not dealt with correctly, they can absolutely bring an end to your life. And, you know, I don't know of what he had with, you know, the bug bite, but even when she said that, I was like, oh my God, that sounds exactly like something I know of, and it ain't a bug bite.
Again, I know that many of you listening did listen to that interview on our program last week. If you want to hear it again or hear it for the first time, it's available along with all of our past shows in full, free of charge. Our full archives available on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Big John and I are back with you next week for an all-new episode of Let's Get It On, first available on Friday. Download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website. Again, that address is letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/letsgetitonpodcast, and on Twitter at Podcast MMA for this show, and for us personally at John McCarthy MMA and at Sean Wheelock. As we like to say, this podcast is yours as much as it is ours, so do please help us spread the word. To ask us a question, make a comment, or inquire about becoming a sponsor of Let's Get It On, email us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. One more time, that's info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. For John McCarthy, our outstanding producer Chris Lakin, and our entire crew, I'm Sean Wheelock. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been a presentation of Lineup Media Group, online at lineupmediagroup.com.
Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever you listen to the show. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in sponsoring Let's Get It On, contact us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Get all the Lineup Media Group podcasts, like Jason Bucks with Pangers on NHLpodcast.com, Ocho Man, Behind the 8-Ball, and You're On the Clock NFL on our website at lineupmediagroup.com.